like to pick up really the themes of this day of atonement, of revolt, remorse, and offer some reflections coming from the Dharma teachings and our own experience, and when I spoke last evening and asked, invited that we all take the precepts together, I think I spoke some about the intention behind it to preserve others and the well-being of life. It's equally an intention born of understanding that when we cause harm to others, we harm ourselves. We could call this a form of enlightened selfishness. If we take care of ourselves by taking care of not harming others. And yet, I think it's very true and very important, and the teaching within the Buddhist tradition on this topic is the teaching of karma, which we may have heard of, and it's kind of, the words become rather popular in Western culture, so you know, it gets used a lot, mostly not very accurately in terms of the teaching. It's like, that's your karma, like, you know, ha, you got your punishment like you should have, and well, that's their karma. And we kind of make ourselves feel better about someone who we don't like that much because they got into trouble. It's not really about that. It's not about some sense of punishment, but of understanding and investigating for ourselves, seeing that the basic orientation in our hearts when we act profoundly influences the way the action ultimately affects us. So we practice meditation and we practice cultivating wholesome qualities of heart, not just because they're beautiful or wholesome or beneficial to this world, but because, in fact, for our own well-being, this is necessary, this is required. So far as we're caught in reactivity, in anger and hatred, in greed and selfishness, the actions that come out of it, although they might seem at times to give us some temporary advantage or benefit, ultimately actually cause us pain in our hearts and harm in our lives. And this is really spoken of as at the heart of the Dharma teachings. This is something the Buddha said, you need to understand this. While many things you may not have to take them on, taking on the truth of action that leads to result, and that there is a result from action, is something he said, we really need to get this. If we don't think our actions will have an effect in our life, or if we treat that casually, then we pay a painful cost. And so in this way, it's very different than some sense of morality that suggests if you do things that are harmful, you're bad, or if you disrespect, you know, the religion or the deity or whatever, then you're somehow bad and you'll be punished. It's not to do with, again, some identity that you're given as a result of the action. It's not that you become someone, but that the experience, and if we open to it and let ourselves feel it, this is evident. When we hurt others, or when we hurt, as we sometimes do, ourselves, if we really come into contact with that, and just, you know, as you were doing the exercise, Leela and I, we took sort of some time, we gave ourselves 6 minutes each, since we needed to keep an eye on what was happening here as well, just to speak. And I really noticed how just naming the things were, or thing, are something that I've done that caused harm to someone. That I was, when young, I was cruel at times to my sister, my younger sister. And I can feel the sadness, the painfulness in my heart of that, just acknowledging that. That there's something about letting that in that informs us when we might next be in a situation where we might act causing harm to someone. We remember, oh, actually, this doesn't actually feel so great in my heart. It might help us just to hold back for a moment from that reaction. The Buddha put it like this. He said, if you take the seed of a neem tree, and neem is it's a medical plant that it's very, very bitter. He said, if you plant the seed of a neem tree, this bitter, bitter thing, when it grows, you will not expect the fruit of that tree to be other than bitter. It must be so. And it's true. So when we act from greed, from hatred, from selfishness, from anger, if we feel the kind of intention that underlies that, it has a painful, bitter, harsh quality to it. And the result of the action has the same quality in the end. So when we act from disregarding others, it actually hurts us. Likewise, the Buddha said, if you plant the seed of a mango, the mango is this, it represents a sort of a sweet, juicy deliciousness that we long for. You plant the seed of a mango, and the tree grows and it bakes fruit. Of course, these fruit will be sweet. It's the nature of the mango. It's the nature of the seed you've planted. And so, how else could it be? When we act from a place of kindness, when we find ourselves able to bring forgiveness, or generosity and sharing, those kind of intentions, they feel sweet in the heart. They feel beautiful. They touch us when we can be there. Although, of course, we might feel scared if we're sharing something that we're not sure we have enough of. Or we might feel a little vulnerable if we're exposing ourselves with kindness towards someone who we're not sure if they'll be kind in return. And yet, it's certainly been my experience, and I think the experience of anyone who really looks into this, that we can sense the quality of our intention in our hearts when we're really there with that. And that gives us information about what will be the result. I had a very interesting sort of example of this given to me one time. We sort of think of karma, and the Buddha said the workings of it were, we can't really fathom exactly how it comes to be in terms of externals, like why one action leads to another. There's many, many different things that come into this. Not all of them are to do just with karma, but also to do with circumstances around us, like the weather, like what's going on in the culture or the society. But this basic principle, it plays out in our lives. And so I was talking about this once at a group in America that I was giving some teaching to. And at the end of talking on this theme, a woman described a situation. She said she'd been living with a housemate, flatmate. Not sure which word you use here. Where I come from, a flatmate is someone who you just casually live with. In America, it's someone you're actually having an intimate relationship with. So I'm just talking about someone who's having a casual living relationship, or just, you know, they're just friends, or not even that, sharing rooms in the same house. So that's a flatmate or housemate to me. And anyway, after some time, this arrangement for the woman who was telling the story started to feel not so good, and she decided she'd move out. And one day, so she packed all her things. She told the person she was going to move out. She packed all her things. The housemate wasn't there. But there was this really nice wooden clothes rack for drying clothes that had been there the whole time. And she knew it wasn't hers, and she wasn't sure if it was her friend's or the housemate's. Maybe it was already in the house when she came. I don't know, she said. But she really liked it. She thought this was a really nice... I don't know if here you get so excited about clothes racks, but it's easier to dry clothes in this country. But anyway, when she left, she took it with her. She moved into another flat. And she really enjoyed this clothes rack. And after some time, she had a housemate who came to live with her. And after some further time, that housemate said, well, actually, I think I'm moving out now. And when she came back the day the housemate moved out, the clothes rack was gone. And it's really amazing to reflect on something like that. How sometimes we see patterns play out in our lives. And in in this teaching, it's not saying that therefore, because we've caused suffering, therefore we must suffer. It's not something heavy like that. If we examine, if we look at, if we encounter the inner effect of those actions in which we have, because we all have, caused harm and suffering to others and ourselves, if we let ourselves feel that directly, if we open to it, and that's what I was speaking about, that feeling of remorse rather than guilt or self-blame or self-attacking. Remorse is different in that it's that sensing, oh, this hurts. This hurts. If we let ourselves feel that, that is the karma. That is all. Now I'm doing it. That's the fruit of the karma. The karma is the original action, then there's the fruit of the karma. And so actually we can receive the fruit of the karma if we open to, if we own and allow ourselves to be impacted by the pain that we experience, or the tenderness or rawness or sorrow that we experience as a result of having caused harm. If we allow our hearts to be open to see that those who we have caused harm to suffer from it, we feel the pain of that. And that allows it to be transformed. It's not like then something has to happen to us to produce that painful fruit. It's already here. And in fact, it's always already here. We don't avoid it by not feeling it. It just tends to drive us unconsciously. And so, there's this interest or this value recognized in being able to acknowledge, yes, I've done things that caused harm, and to feel the remorse of that, the sorrow of that. To understand that this is like a form of medicine we take that is healing for our hearts, though painful, or like strong medicine, bitter. And this also provides a very strong motivation for us as we get in touch with this to see, yeah, so far as I can, I want to not cause harm. And so far as I can, I want to not close my heart to others. Because the very closing of our heart that leads to our reactivity to harmful behaviors, when we disregard others, when we're just concerned with me or mine, that closing of the heart is painful to us. And the Buddha was really quite uncompromising on this point. He was absolutely clear and firm in his instruction with regard to this. That there is really no benefit to be gained from closing our hearts. In fact, he said once, and this was in a teaching called The Simile of the Saw, very famous. He said once, even though you were being sawn in half by bandits wielding a two-handed saw, if you should have, other than the wish to have loving kindness in your heart for them, you would not be a follower of my teaching. And, you know, it sounds kind of extreme. It's like, wow. He's saying if you're being sawn, you know, with a saw, two-handed saw, like for cutting down a big tree, sawn in half by bandits, robbers, criminals, that his teaching would be still to have loving kindness in your heart for them, so far as you're able. And you know, it makes sense really. I'm not saying that's going to be easy, or that he's saying that you have to do it, but that's your intention. Because if you're going to die, you know, how do you want to go out? What condition do you want your heart to be in? If this is its last moment. He doesn't say, if you're being sawn in half, just let them do it, if you can escape. He doesn't say, hand yourself over. The context has to be, for me, to make sense. Of course, if you can escape from someone who's harming you, do so. But if you can't, do you have to close your heart as well as be harmed by them? Because that is a harm they're not doing to you. So I hope to be really clear, I'm not saying that one just allows oneself to be hurt. If you can be clear, strong, and say no, or sure, of course, but with an open heart, if possible, Or else, even though you protect yourself physically or emotionally at some level, we still get hurt in the closing of the heart. And we know how painful it is when our heart closes to others, sometimes to those we love and are close to, perhaps most painfully when it closes to ourselves or parts of ourselves. And so in this context, we can maybe reflect on the response of His Holiness, the Dalai Lama. When he was at once asked by an interviewer, I think in America, he said to him, "You know, Your Holiness, it's very hard for us to understand. You seem to have so much a sense of forgiveness and lightness and even friendliness, it seems, towards the Chinese government that has caused so much harm to you and your people. We don't understand why you're not angry and hateful towards them, towards these people." And the Dalai Lama responded, he said, "You know, they've taken over my country. They've destroyed my monasteries. They've beaten my people. They've imprisoned and killed monks and nuns of my tradition. They've exiled me. They've taken from me everything they can take. Should I let them take my heart as well?" Remarkable clarity and understanding. Only this, in the end, we have the final say about. And yet, without some inner reflection and practice, it feels like we don't have much choice. The heart just closes. We react. We shut down to others, to ourselves. And we need to understand here that this is something we learn, we grow in. We can't just do it, but we can grow in it. And it's important to really have respect for the power of this force of anger that closes the heart, that's attempting to protect us from harm. It has in its root something of preserving and protecting that which we care for, but that it becomes distorted in its expression and causes harm to others and ourselves. We know this, I think. We see in the world the incredible pain and suffering caused by anger, by hard-heartedness. And we feel the ache in our own hearts to the degree that they are closed, hardened, or held against someone, or withheld from someone or ourselves. So we really need to respect the power of this reactivity in us. There's a lot of stories I plan to tell you, so. But there's another story, so here's one of them, of a hermit who lived many years ago in a cave in the hill above a small village. And he lived for many years in this cave, and he was a hermit is someone who goes to live alone in a cave, usually associated with some sense of spiritual intention, but not necessarily. But in this case, yes. So he lived alone, and the villagers would take some food up there most days to feed him, and so he had a little relationship with them, but it was mostly just this old man living in the cave in the hill. And then one night, when he'd been living there for 20 years, at the morning, just before dusk, before dawn, before the light, there was this bright glow that came from the front of the cave, and it illuminated the whole village. And everyone was talking, "Ah, something must have happened, the old man, wow." And that morning, he walked down from the cave for the first time. The young ones were seeing him. The old ones had seen him only long ago. And he walked down, and the villagers came to him. They said, "Oh, Master, tell us, what have you learned? What have you discovered in your 20 years? And the hermit, he said, "I have overcome my anger." And they thought, the village, "Oh, great, that's wonderful. Wow, that's impressive, yeah. And so what else have you learned in your 20 years? He says, "I have come to the end of anger. I've made an end of it. It is no more." "Great, hey, wow, that's, you know, I wish I could do that. But surely you must have learned something else in all that time up there." He says,
Is it not enough for you that I've overcome my anger?
We're really vulnerable human beings. We get hurt. Even when we think we've overcome our anger, we might start to feel annoyed. People don't think that's quite an achievement. We're vulnerable and tender in so many ways. We are so impacted by life. And what happens to us is that if we can't open to and hold that tenderness, we try and protect ourselves. In a way, we close down in our hearts. And at times we strike out at others, or we push away others, or we disregard others because of our need to try and protect ourselves or to preserve our own well-being or that of those we love. And so when we look at it, when we reflect on what it means to have caused harm in this world, what it means to understand the truth of this, we have to look at our human condition, the suffering that is in it, the vulnerability that is in it, and how that affects us. So, another story, it's more of a simile, a metaphor that came to me that I'd like to describe for how I've come to understand the situation. So just imagine, some of you heard this a few days ago, but just imagine, close your eyes if you like, you're walking in the woods one afternoon. It's cool and pleasant, the late afternoon, and you see beside a tree a small puppy, and enjoying small puppies, you reach out to stroke it, and as you do so, it bites you, sinking its teeth into your hand, drawing blood. And just imagine your reaction. You might swear, like, I won't say the word, dog. We might think very quickly, and the hand comes up, I'm going to teach you a lesson. You don't just go biting me. I was here being friendly. And we have the sense of, this dog needs to learn something here. I'm going to teach it a lesson. And then just as we want to do, or we're going to strike it or yell at it, we see that its foot is caught in a trap. And those with spring-loaded traps with jaws for catching small creatures. What happens in that moment in your heart and your mind when you see what's going on? We realize in that moment, it seems to me, that this puppy isn't trying to hurt, it has hurt me, but it wasn't really trying to hurt me. It was in pain. It was afraid. It was somehow trying to find its way out, and it didn't know how. And in some strange and tragic way, it's bitten me, asking for help. And then I, with its teeth in my hand, just like the teeth of the jaw on its leg, I wanted to do the same. I would have done the same. And yet we see there's awareness comes in. It's like, oh, this is what's happening. And then we don't want to strike this puppy. Sure, we want to take our hand so it doesn't hurt us anymore. But then we want to maybe find some way to help this puppy. Maybe we want to find a way, without getting bitten, to get its foot out of the claw. Maybe we want to have a word to the person who put the trap there. That's something else. And so what is the same? A situation. It's like, for me, and I've done this on regular occasion, I find it an important practice to reflect on those things that I've done that have caused harm to others, and to see and let myself know that when I've done so because I was afraid. I was in need of something, so I disregarded them. I was afraid of something that was happening, so I tried to protect myself, and I wasn't in that moment caring about the impact on the person I pushed away or I hurt, or from whom I took what I thought I needed. Like, I couldn't in that moment see beyond my own need, my own fear, my own pain. And in understanding that, there's a natural way one can begin to open to oneself, one's own limited capacity to be friendly, to be kind, to see that with understanding, rather than judgment or blame, to feel the remorse that is there, but to remove the guilt that says somehow because I caused harm I'm bad. No, because I caused harm I'm still learning, I'm still limited, I'm still not entirely free. There's an appropriate humility in that, something powerful. And to understand, not just for me, this is how it is for beings, all beings, human beings and others too. I think if you look, because we can't know for other people what is true, but if we look into our own hearts and see what is true for us, we will also know what is true for them. And so imagine then we're going again into the woods. At some time later we've forgotten about what happened that time. And we see a puppy in the woods. We reach out to stroke it and it bites our hand. And it's that time of year when all the leaves fall. So when we look at the puppy, we see that it's standing up to its shoulders in leaves. We can't see its legs. What would it mean for us to understand in that moment that the puppy's foot was in a trap, even though we could not see the trap? To understand that would mean that we would need to understand that it's not in the nature of a puppy to want to cause pain to us or anyone else. Of course, the puppy wishes to be free from pain, just as we do. If we understand that, it's not the nature of the puppy to want to cause pain, but simply to wish to be free of it, we see ourselves too and every being in this world who causes pain sometimes to others or to ourselves. And perhaps we can see that what we really wish in our heart is to find help for that place in our heart or in another where our fear or need leads us to cause suffering, leads others to cause suffering. So we start to bring compassion to the suffering that's there, rather than reactivity and judgment that simply repeats the cycle of suffering and of harm that makes it go round and round. It's like understanding that there's a blindness that comes upon us. And if a blind person should walk into us and we realize they were blind, we wouldn't blame them. We'd more think, should have got out of their way. To know that we all have some degree of blindness. And that as we see this, as we open to this, as we forgive ourselves for this perhaps, there is a way in which we enter into what we call atonement. This is the word, the translation in English for Yom Kippur, is the Day of Atonement. I don't know if you resonate with that word, but in the English what it means is that sense of having made good for the harm we've done, somehow balanced the scales. So we've done some harm to someone, maybe then we bring them something to say sorry. Or if we can't bring them something, maybe we do something else to help somebody else as a way of saying sorry. The word literally comes from the word, or the language is at one ment, coming back to being at one with God is the literal translation and root of that word, atonement. And that somehow when we open to and make some response in the way of healing the harm we have done to others and ourselves, we heal the rift, the separation that's created by it, and we find ourselves coming more fully into contact with something profound, something divine. We can call it God, and in some traditions, certainly in Judaism, this is the word used. But it's also more, there's something about forgiveness, something about the honesty to acknowledge our limitation and our mistakes, the courage to forgive others and ourselves. There's something of that that partakes of the divine. It's part of why it's hard. It's something really quite immense. And yet it's also something we can cultivate and develop. So sometimes we need to find a way to say sorry. Sometimes we need to find a way to make good. The Buddha recommends it as a practice. Giving a gift to someone that you're angry with, it's a great practice. Even thinking about it, my mind goes, no, I don't want to. And even if one still feels angry, making a gift, very powerful. Sometimes to oneself we can do this also. I started off saying I'll talk for about 30 minutes, but I think I'm going to go for just a little longer. Time is a funny thing. So there's a story that really touches me in this regard and feels quite close to my life also. It's the story of Gandhi. And something that happened in Calcutta in the time of partition in India in 1947, when there was an immense amount of fear and violence between the communities of the Hindus and the Muslims. And my grandmother, who's a Bengali Indian, was there at the time and part of the independence movement. And so I know something of that situation from her. This isn't her story, but that's the piece where it's not just a story for me, because she was a young woman in that time. And so this story concerns a man who came to Gandhi. He was a Hindu. And at this time there was a lot of violence taking place between communities. It was really dangerous. A lot of hatred, a lot of fear, a lot of anger. And he said, Gandhi, he came to him in tears and desperation. He said, Gandhi, Gandhiji, you must help me, you must help me. I can't go on. This terrible thing has happened. He said, Gandhi, my son, he was only 5 years old. He was walking home from school yesterday. And a group of men of the other community, a group of men who were Muslims, found him coming home. And they beat him and they killed him. Gandhi, I was so angry. I could not bear the pain and the grief and the anger. And myself and my brothers and friends, we went out into the streets. We found a young Muslim boy, 5 years old or so, and we killed him. And I cannot live with what I have done. He said to Gandhi, you must help me because I cannot go on. Gandhiji said, I can help you, but you must do just as I say. He said, this is a terrible thing that has happened to you, and a terrible thing that you have done, but always there is hope for the heart. So what I want you to do is to go out into the areas of the town where there are many people who have lost their near and dear, and find an orphan Muslim boy whose parents have been killed, because there were many at this time. Find an orphan Muslim boy, bring him home, and raise him as your own child. He said, if you can do this, this will help your heart to heal. He said, but you must raise him in your family as your own child, and you must raise him as a Muslim. So for me, the story speaks to really facing the consequences of our actions, and how the way we set ourselves apart from others we hold ourselves different to others by our gender, by our family, by our state, by our race, by our religion. This tendency to narrow and close the heart, to say only mine I am concerned of and those I am not, this is the root of not just the violence in this world, but the suffering in our hearts. And this is something we are asked to transform. They called Gandhiji Mahatma, the great heart. And one senses and feels here the greatness of heart in that man and that he stood for. And the power of his non-violence that overcame the violence of the British Empire. So there's this process of atonement, of finding our way back to be at one with our hearts, with our truth, with the divine, however we can see that, if we do at all. That starts to understand there are no bad people, others or ourselves. There are only actions which cause harm and that need healing in others and ourselves. So there's one last story. And this story is from not so long ago, maybe it's heading for 10 years ago now. A woman attended a court hearing. It was a murder trial of a young man, aged 14, who had murdered her son on the streets of Los Angeles in a poor, impoverished area. The young man in the dock for murder, tried for murder, had grown up without family or support on the streets and had wanted to join one of the gangs to have some community. And to join the gang, the price or the act, what he was asked to do to become a member of the gang, was to kill someone. So he went and quite randomly chose this other young boy and shot him. And he was found guilty. He was sentenced to an extended period in a juvenile institution, so like a children's prison, age 13 or 14. And the woman, the mother of the boy he had killed, when he was sentenced and just before he was taken away to prison, she looked at him straight in the eye and she said, "I'm going to kill you." And this boy just, he was kind of like, his eyes are blank, no response, just nothing there, it seemed, through the whole trial and even in the face of that. "I'm going to kill you," she said, and walked out. And so, after some time, this boy is in prison, she writes him a letter, asks how he is. It's the only letter he's received. She writes him another after some time and inquires after him, asks how he is. After a little while, she writes and says she'd like to visit. And then she does. And then she visits. And over the course of several years that he was there, because he was a juvenile, it wasn't such a long sentence for murder. Maybe 6-7 years, I don't know exactly. She spends time with him. She gets to know him. And just before he's due to be released, she comes to visit again. She says, "You know, I know you have nowhere to go. Would you like to come and stay in my house when you come out of this prison?" And he had nowhere to go. He said, "Okay." And when she came, when she brought him, or when he came to her house, she sat down with him and she said, "You know, do you remember what I said to you at the end of your trial?" He said, "Yeah." something in him had been affected, even though he didn't show it at the time. She said, "I meant what I said." But with a lot of love, she said it. And she said, "You know, I did not want the hatred and the fear and the anger in you that could kill my boy, my precious son, not even having known him at all. I did not want that to live. And you know, I think we've become friends in all our meetings. I actually quite like you. And I think maybe you might like me. So I have this spare room in my house. It has all the things a young man needs. And if you'd like to live with me, I'd like to invite you to be my son." He said yes. Remarkable understanding and heart to see that it's not the scared, frightened actor, the boy, that is the killer. It's the fear, it's the anger, it's the alienation, the loneliness, the desperateness that led him to act in that way. That is what needs addressing. And that is what we learn to address in our own hearts as one essential element of inner work, of spiritual practice. And as we do this more and more, we start to understand that the natural love in our heart that wishes to protect us from harm does not need to be limited in its care to just us, to me, or mine, but that in fact is most able to care for us when we allow it to care for all beings, to include all beings in the field of our love, our friendliness. To forgive others and forgive ourselves for the harm we have caused, while at the same time acting to try and reduce the harm that may be caused in the future, and to heal the pain that has been caused by the past. And this, to me, is really the practice of forgiveness, of atonement, and the transformation of a life from being isolated and fragmented into one that is whole, one that is healed, and one that is holy. So just advise you to sit for a moment with this, and then I'll pass the microphone to Lena.